Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's August 26th. Currently 59 degrees under mostly cloudy skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 64 degrees and mostly cloudy skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Wasatch Back forecast for this Tuesday. We're looking at periods of scattered showers and thunderstorms increasing across the area as we go throughout the day. Temperatures because of the showers and storms will remain in the 70s across the region. Some of that rainfall could be locally heavy with some isolated flash flooding potential that will be possible as we go throughout the next couple of days. Again, temperatures will be held in check due to the clouds and the showers and storms. As we go into your Wednesday, we're still looking at a good chance of scattered showers and storms developing throughout the day, so make sure you keep that rain gear close by. Obviously, with the showers and thunderstorms, temperatures will remain in the 70s, barely in the low 70s in Park City. We'll be into the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. As we move into your Thursday, we'll keep that chance of isolated to scattered showers or storms in the forecast. High temperatures will remain in the mid-70s in Park City. We'll see those highs right around 80 for us in the Heber Valley. Going into your Friday, we'll keep a pop-up shower and storm chance, but we start to really dry things out by your Friday. High temperatures will return to the low 80s in the Heber Valley. We'll see those highs back in the mid to upper 70s for us in the Park City area. Once we get to the weekend, it's dry out there. As we dry things out, we're going to be looking at those temperatures starting to warm back up as well. We'll see those highs back into the low 80s there for us in the Heber Valley, low to mid 80s, and we'll be seeing those temperatures in the upper 70s to low 80s for the Park City area. So if you're making some Labor Day weekend plans, right now the forecast is looking pretty decent. Can't rule out a pop-up isolated shower, but for the most part, a much drier trend looks to develop just in time for the holiday weekend. Otherwise, as we go throughout the week, we're going to see these overnight low temperatures staying in the 50s across the area. So it's going to feel somewhat comfortable with the chances of scattered showers and storms over the next few days. But again, remember, we do have that isolated flash flood threat. So stay weather aware, have a way to receive weather alerts just in case the water levels start to rise quickly in your area. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with the executive director of the Park City Performing Arts Foundation, Amber Conley, with details on the final two summer shows and a look ahead at this winter's main stage schedule. The executive director of Sage Mountain, Lauren Lockie, with details about the organization's upcoming annual fundraiser and some new construction plans. And from the historic Echo Church Board of Trustees, Sandra Morrison will be joined by author and local attorney Brian Craig with details on the new lecture happening at the historic Echo Church this weekend. Taking a look at some local news now, the Francis City Council has banned future hotels in town. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the new rules respond to public outcry over two previous projects.
Council members and the mayor unanimously approved the new city code August 14th, adding regulations for short-term rentals and standing in the way of any more hotels. But the two hotels approved earlier this year would be grandfathered into the measure. One is at the intersection of State Routes 32 and 35, and the other is at Lambert Lane and State Route 32. Nearby residents are appealing the latter in 3rd District Court. Francis drafted code changes following community outcry about the two hotels, which drew hours of negative public comment and a protest. The short-term rental regulations cap the number of STRs at 3% of the number of rooftops in Francis. According to a city staff report, that would allow 18 nightly rentals based on the town's current size. STRs would not go through the conditional use permit process anymore. They'd have their own special permit that staff alone would review. Also included in the sweeping changes was an amendment to the conditional use permit, or CUP, process. The city council would no longer make the final call, shifting approval authority to the planning commission. Planners previously told KPCW the CUP process can be confusing to the general public because the city has a limited ability to deny them. For a link to the full slate of code changes, visit kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Heber City Planning Commission will look at two proposals for new housing downtown at its meeting tonight. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that.
Combined, the two projects could add 24 new homes to small pieces of land in downtown Heber. The first proposal is for a duplex near 600 South. The owners of the land near Wasatch High School's football fields want to add two units of housing to the quarter-acre site. A development agreement was approved by the City Council 2 years ago, and the Planning Commission will discuss the site plan at its meeting Tuesday. Also on the agenda is a proposal for 22 townhomes on a half-acre parcel along 200 North, just east of Main Street. It's called The Edge. The development, originally proposed as residential, now includes some commercial space as well. Both proposed developments come as Heber looks to create pockets of new residential density downtown. City Council members are considering what types of density to encourage in the Central Heber Overlay Zone. Planning commissioners have previously said the changes could provide important tools to help the city create missing middle housing for residents who don't qualify for income-restricted units but who can't afford a market-rate single-family home. The Planning Commission meeting begins at 6 p.m. Tuesday. An agenda and a link to attend online are available at kbcw.org. Heber City is a financial supporter of KBCW. Grace Dorfler, KBCW News.
Well, the Park City Performing Arts Foundation has two more shows to wrap up its summer season, and it just announced the lineup for this winter's main stage season at the Park City Eccles Center. In the studio with a preview of the executive director of the foundation, Amber Conley. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you're down to the two final shows of the summer. Who's performing and what can audiences look forward to?
Right. So Concerts on the Slopes out at Canyons Village at Park City Mountain. We have Spin Doctors, Gem Blossoms, and Blues Travelers. That show is completely sold out, so we don't have any seats available. We were kind of giggling a little bit of how much they are actually on the aftermarket. So people are selling them on the after, you know, the other market. And then our final show of the season is Saturday evening. Clint Black is coming through, and really excited. He's been touring all summer, and his show is going to be phenomenal.
Okay, tickets still available for that.
Tickets, lawn tickets are still available. That's been something that we're really thrilled with. And that's from the beginning of when we released our season, probably within, 3 months after we released, all of our reserved seats for our shows have been sold out.
Talk a little bit about the facility, because it sounds like Vail has done quite a bit of work.
They have, and we're really thankful with the partnership that we have with CVMA and Park City Mountain. They went in this year and, I'm going to say, cut our hill back to where the slope is not near what it was last year. So for those of you that were there last year and haven't been back this year, I would encourage you to come back because it's no longer the tuck and roll hill, right? but it's really phenomenal. And we've put in more food, more bars are available. You can pack your picnic. You can bring food in. You just can't bring alcoholic beverages in. And it's a family-friendly environment, which we love, right? We're creating that new generation of music lovers.
And it sounds like there more work's going to be done?
It is. That's where we're excited for this next year. They're going to continue to work on the mountain and expand our seating area. So we're hoping to eventually get to that 5,000 seats. 5,000 to 6,000 would be ideal.
Okay, what are you at now?
We're at 3,500 right now comfortably.
Okay, and then how much of that is the reserve?
Reserve, we usually have about 500 reserved seats. We also have, we've had several corporate groups or just small groups doing birthday parties come out, and we do a skybox, which is they're in our just at the top of the reserved, and we have our chairs for them. So it's a great fun way to get out and enjoy a group of people that you're with.
Yeah. So is there a minimum?
20, yep, minimum is 20, and then we can accommodate up to 50.
Awesome.
Yep.
So how has the summer concert season gone overall? I mean, any standout?
Yeah, there was. Country always sells. I mean, it's been heavy country. But one of the most fun evenings was our 80s night out. So that was A Flock of Seagulls, Naked Eyes, and Men Without Hats. And it is our generation, of course, ages, and that's the generation that I grew up on was the 80s music. We saw lots of big hair and some neon and some leg warmers. So it was just a really fun night. We also had some surprises. Our Strings on the Slopes, which brought in Carolyn Campbell, a violinist, Casey Elliott of Gentry, and William Joseph, who's just an amazing pianist. He's done some work with some of the best, surprised, just blew us away, as did Chris Bodie. Chris Bodie's always a great performer, but he brought in a couple of new individuals that we had never seen, and from just a standpoint of anecdotal, probably had more people come up to us during that concert and just say, wow, they love the venue, they love being out, they loved the music. And again, the venue itself, there's lots of places to go eat before, the parking's easy. The parking, we're getting ready to have that big parking garage, so parking is a little more congested, but it's still, I took the High Valley Transit, and from Ecker all the way to the top of the mountain, it took me 20 minutes. So, it's easy to get to.
Yeah, because they'll drop you right off there at the base of the cabriolet.
Yep, at the cabriolet.
Okay, let's see. Any noticeable trends this summer? I mean, do you have any kind of new audience demographics?
We tried to mix up our genres for our concerts. You know, we always try to bring in someone new, someone you haven't heard of, but also some of those younger, plain white tees was a blast. And that gets our younger, you know, college age genre. And I already hit the country, but our country weekend was a huge success. We had Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. We had Diamond Rio. We had Randy Houser. And we also had Lucas Nelson and Molly Tuttle. They were phenomenal. And that's something that we're looking at for this next year is that Americana blues sells really well. And that's, we have agents already reaching out to us, which that's something I'd like to say too, is we are finally on the map. After 3 years, the agents know, hey, this is a great venue. And from a team standpoint, I have an incredible team that I work with. We have made it our mission to take care of the artists when they get here, because we live in such a great town. So before they even arrive, we're working and saying, how can we, we have gondola rides for you. We can get tea times for you. There's 3 great spas within walking distance of the venue, and the word is out.
That's pretty tough. Thursday, Friday, Saturday shows right in a row.
It was, but believe it or not, they all, first of all, exceeded our expectations. And the sales were lagging a little bit on the Saturday show. And we had people that had come on Thursday and Friday and loved it so much that they ended up getting tickets for Saturday. And that's the other thing that we saw too, is we've been able to pull in some new corporate sponsors because they're starting to see that this is a great way to reach new audiences.
Awesome. All right. So when do you start planning next summer's show?
We're already ready. We're getting our dates with CVMA. And then we have agents that are starting to send us artists and look at that. Well, last year we were pretty set by January 1, and we had a few trickle in, and so we will release by March 1st this next year. And that's another thing I think that's happened is that it's what we do in Park City. We kind of wait till the last minute to make our plans. And there's been some, what do you mean you don't have reserve seats left, right? So that's something that I always encourage. We are a nonprofit. We have sponsors. We can't do it without our sponsors, right? We can't make it on ticket sales alone. And so if you're interested in getting the best of the best seats, now's the time.
Okay. You mentioned that you got to kind of wait for the CVMA to get you the dates. Who do you share the venue with?
Okay. Right. So that is, we love Mountain Town Music. So, you know, we do work with Mountain Town. And then also they bring in, just from a resort side, there's different events that run through the forum. We had a running event that overlapped one of our events, and that's just the way of our resorts.
Okay, but it worked out okay.
Everything's great.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, looking ahead, anything you can share about the upcoming main stage winter season? That kicks off in October,
yep,
I think.
Yep, so we are completely planned for our winter season, moving over to the Eccles Center. We, again, have a mixed genre of performances. We have some great speakers. We're doing our Nat Geo Live series again. We love our sing-alongs, and those are just some great audience opportunities that they bring in groups, and we have a great time dressing up for those sing-alongs. But we also have 2 phenomenal, and they are back-to-back. We have an a cappella group coming in, Home Free. They have over 1 million followers. I had never heard of them, and they're selling like crazy. So that's another one. If you're interested in getting tickets, now's the time. It's their holiday show. And then the very next night is Matteo Bocelli. So that's, right, that's Andre Bocelli's son. He's young, he's on the move, and it's going to be a great night, December the 6th.
A tenor as well?
Yes, yes. It's he's, and plus, we always say he's not bad to look at.
Okay, these sing-alongs, as you mentioned, I mean, you've got one, two, at least three of them.
You know, these are, first of all, our team loves putting them on. And so I work with a young team, and we have found that they're some of our best-selling shows. And they're easy to produce, and, you know, again, it builds that community of coming in and having a lot of fun.
Okay, you've got Wicked,
yes.
White Christmas, and Little Mermaid. Of course, everybody knows...
Oh, yes, and Little Mermaid is going to be a beach party, so a beach party in March.
Okay. And then you've also found a lot of success then with the Nat Geo, the National Geographic.
They are. We have three speakers coming in. We have penguins at the end of the season. We have adventures in caving. And, you know, we have first of all, the caving system, you know, we're just a few hours from Idaho with the Craters of the Moon caves. So, you know, we have a good population for that. And then I'm actually going blank on the other one that we have.
The Pirates Life.
Pirates, good grief. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. So that kicks off our Halloween. And that's something else that we're doing. We're doing a Halloween hangover brunch as one of our fundraisers on November 1st up at St. Regis. And so we're really getting into our Halloween spirit for this fall.
Okay. And tell me about some of the other groups that you've got coming in.
Yep, of course. So U.S. Army Band is a free evening. It is the U.S. Army Band. We have two magician masterminds that will be coming in, Michael Grandinetti and Colin Cloud. And then One Night in Memphis is actually a tribute show that I think is going to be, it's Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley. It's just going to be a great evening of music.
Okay. I know you're also building up sponsorships for the winter shows as well.
We are, and, you know, we do have our sponsorships. It includes tickets, it includes meet and greets, and this will be the last year that it includes Sundance tickets. So all of our sponsors during the winter season receive Sundance tickets. And that's something from just an organizational standpoint that the board and I are working towards, because a lot of our sponsors engage in our shows because of that perk, because we are able to provide Sundance tickets.
So what's the plan post Sundance?
Yeah, well, that's summer. Our plan is summer. That's where we'll be able to pull in at least a little bit more revenue on our side. You know, and I think that's something important to share is, and I've already said this, we can't make it on ticket sales alone. We really depend on our sponsors for both seasons.
Right. So do you think summer's going to outperform
100%.
Winters? Really?
Yep, 100%. It already has.
Well, because you can get 3,500 as opposed to 1,300.
Right, right. And it's just, you know, we've seen it on the day of show and this is true both for winter and for summer, but our day of shows for our summer, we're seeing anywhere from 200 to 400 tickets being sold. And that's a huge bump on that day of show. The other thing that we look at is we run zip codes. So we're able to pull our data off of our ticketing system. And it's what we've seen is that during our summer, it's 85% out of county. So outside of Summit County, we're pulling in the valley. We actually pull heavily from Idaho. And then our winter is kind of the exact opposite. Our winter is a lot more of just our community. Summit County, we have, you know, we do our initiatives during the winter with our seniors. We do outreach with our seniors. And we also, of course, both series, we provide $5 or $10 veteran tickets, active military. So we love our veterans. And then during the winter, we also do $5 student tickets for Summit County students.
Okay. You also used to do a lot of educational outreach. Is that going to happen this winter as well?
Yep, which is one of the reasons we love Nat Geo. They come in and they put on an amazing 55, 60-minute presentation. And last year, we were able to reach over 5,000 students by doing our outreach.
All right. Anything new in the work? I mean, any facility updates, anything like that?
Nope. Just appreciate the partnership that we have with our school district and working together at Eccles. They've been such a great partner with us and just continuing that. And then I've already shared that we love working with CVMA and Park City Mountain.
Okay. Again, Thursday show sold out, but tickets available Saturday's Clint Black show.
Yep, Saturday's Clint Black, which, again, if you even remotely like country music, he's that 80s, 90s country, 22 CMA Awards, and he is a great showman.
Okay. And then tickets are also available for the winter season online right
now. Yep, parkcitypa.org or concertsontheslopes.com.
Okay. Amber, anything else you want to mention?
No, I appreciate the time, Leslie.
Thank you. Amber Conley, again, the executive director of the Park City Performing Arts Foundation. Today is the deadline for Utah municipalities to certify their primary election numbers. Here in Summit County, Colville, Francis, Hennefer, and Park City will all make their vote counts official. In Wasatch County, Charleston, Heber, and Midway voted in primaries and will canvass results at city council meetings today. The canvass certifies all primary election results, confirming candidates who will be on the ballot for the general election on November 4th. And High Valley Transit's new dedicated bus lane is coming to State Route 224, but the system needs a name. The district plans to widen Route 224 by about 10 feet and add a combination of dedicated bus and mixed flow lanes called Bus Rapid Transit, or BRT, on each side of the road up to Kearns Boulevard and Kimball Junction. The goal of the project is to provide fast and reliable transit for 5,000 people a day without additional traffic or parking structures. High Valley Transit now asking residents to help name the new BRT system. The project design will last until 2026 when construction can begin. High Valley Transit says that BRT services on Route 224 are expected to begin by 2028. Tickets to the Sage Mountain annual fundraiser are on sale, and in the studio to tell us more is the executive director of the Browns Canyon Animal Sanctuary, Lauren Locke. Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe just tell us a little bit about Sage Mountain. Who are you and what do you guys do?
Okay, so we've been around. Nonprofit started in 2013. We have 40 animals, and we provide sanctuary for rescued farm animals. And right now we're in the process of building a barn. We've had shelters for the majority of the time. And then we are also getting ready for our yearly fundraiser, which is coming up this Saturday. I can't even believe it's already here. Saturday, yeah, August 30th.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about that. When and where and...
Okay, so it's Gala for the Animals, primarily known as Plant-Based Palooza. And it's out at Sage Mountain, and it's this Saturday, 5:30 to 9. And we have a great lineup. We're going to be serving Sweet Hazel food. So I think we're doing tacos this year, street tacos. Kate Chanson, who's a local musician, local artist here in Park City, she's going to be playing music for 2 hours through the night. We'll have a silent auction, which we have a lot of really great, wonderful things this year, including a night at Stein Erickson Lodge. We have a few different gift certificates to local restaurants, Salt Lake and Park City, as well as different local businesses like Lococo and other things like that. And we also have, which is the main focus, is our live animal sponsor auction, which we do every year, which is so much fun. You get to bid to sponsor these animals, and we'll be focusing mainly, at least in the beginning, on our cows, because this year we're focusing on the cow area of the barn called the Cow Comfort Project, which we're trying to raise $130,000 for that particular part of the barn. So we'll be starting with all of our 7 cows to bid.
Okay, so that's kind of the mission behind this, is to raise that money for
yes.
the Cow Comfort. Okay.
Yes.
How much are tickets and where are they available?
They're available through our website, available online. Tickets are $90 for adult and $45 for kids, and that includes the music and the food. It's BYOB, so bring your own beverage, as well as chairs and blankets. We won't be providing those, which we found that last year that worked really well, because you could sit on the ground with a blanket, use your pillows, use your chairs, and we'll be centered around the platform out there.
Okay. So at last week's Eastern Summit County Planning Commission meeting, an accessory building project was approved. Is that the The barn you're talking about?
Yes, that is the barn. Yes, yes. So the barn is 7,000 square feet. We're hoping to be done by the winter. We'll see if that happens. It seems like a really big... Is that they've already started the excavating and everything out there. But yes, we finally got approved the conditional use permit. We do have to work something on the road. I'm a little unsure about that at this point, but we are on the way, yes.
Okay, and just a portion of that then is for cows.
Yes, and then yes, it is a whole, it's going to be a whole building, but we, for this particular fundraiser, yes, we're focusing on the cows, their area, because right now, the way it works out there is that the cows have their own area anyway. They can't be with the other animals because they have their horns, right? So not that they mean to, but they can definitely do some damage. So they are separate from the other animals.
Okay. And you had mentioned you've got 40 animals, and they come from where?
They all come from different situations. So I thought today I might talk about Reba, just because we are focusing on cows this weekend. So Reba actually escaped. She's one of our cows. She escaped a farm and was pretty wild, actually, for a few months in Utah County. And we were able to finally capture her with the help of many people. And what we didn't know when we got her was that she was pregnant. And I think that's why she was so, I mean, there's videos, you can go watch her. She is slamming her head against the fencing, trying to escape, didn't want to be captured, I'm sure, because she was not only protecting herself and she was scared, but also she had a baby, which no one knew about. So once we got her to the sanctuary, she stayed pretty fearful for a while. And then two winters ago, she gave birth to baby Francis. And it's been really amazing to watch her and to watch him and how much trust she's gained in us, and just knowing that she's safe. We can go and cuddle her baby. Can't really touch Reba quite yet, but she is totally comfortable in her herd with all the other cows, and they just are living their life out there.
Interesting, she's so spooked. We don't know where that's from, huh?
Yeah, I think, you know, you think about how these cows are raised, you know, eventually they will go, whether it's to slaughter or to something else. And so I think she was really afraid from where she had been. And then it took her a while once she got to us to realize, oh, I'm safe here. I have all this space. I can raise my baby, and she's okay.
All right. So of the 40 animals, how many are cows?
7.
Okay. And then what other animals do you have?
We have pigs, sheep, goats, turkeys, and chickens. And unfortunately, I think I've talked to you before about Wilma Jean. We just recently lost Wilma Jean. She was our very, very first pig. So we had her for 10 years, and she recently passed away, which was really, really heartbreaking. But that's part of running a sanctuary. You bring them out of these kind of horrid situations and provide this great life for them, but then they still end up passing, which is always really, really tough.
Yeah. And what the fundraising that you do, I mean, you've got the ranch there, so it's really to take care of the animals, the vet and the feeding, is that?
Yeah, so yearly, you know, with everything, it's about close to 150 grand just for feed, for fundraising, for marketing, for vet. Vet can be super expensive. So that is about our yearly budget, yes, to keep it going.
Okay. How do you think this new building is going to improve conditions or maybe enhance visitor experience there?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I am so excited about it. It really is going to be a game changer. As you know, the last winters have been very, very tough, and especially out there, Browns Canyon, it gets so windy. So there's snow drifts and it goes over the fence lines. You can't open the gates. People are sliding everywhere. Water hoses are freezing. Everything's just a mess out there. Animals are all huddled into their shelters. So we're going to have more space for the animals. It's going to be much easier for people to walk around, to do everything they need to do, like feeding and watering. We're going to have a quarantine and a vet area. We don't have that right now, which has been really, really hard for us and for the animals. We're going to have a place to keep all the feed, all the equipment. So it really is going to be something that is going to make everything much easier, not only for the animals, but for everyone out there. And it provides, yes, an opportunity for us to have more events out there, possibly dinners, music, keep our yoga program going throughout the entire year. So these are all things that we're really going to benefit.
Okay. And is there any volunteer or educational opportunities that kind of will grow as a result of the new space?
Yeah, I think so. So right now we do volunteer days on Saturdays. We do the yoga. We're doing a mindfulness retreat the first Monday. It's a mini retreat the first Monday of every month. So I would like to keep those things going. We've worked with Live Like Sam, had volunteer opportunities out there, had the kids come out there, different school programs. So the idea, yes, would be to have more workshops out there for people to learn not only about the animals, but just about different changes that we can make in our daily life to be healthier, to eat more plant-based foods, to protect the environment through our choices of what we eat. So definitely opportunities out there with this barn.
All right. And you have a calendar online then? Where do people...
For
website?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't understand. So yes, through our website, you can go on and sign up to volunteer, whether that's on Saturdays or if you want to volunteer throughout the week. We definitely need more volunteers out there with feeding and just daily cleaning.
Okay, sagemountain.org?
So, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then the animals themselves, I mean, people bring them to you or you find out about them? Or?
Yeah, so we find out about them either through a phone call. Right now we are at capacity. We could probably take more birds, but until we have the barn, we're just going to wait and see what that looks like. But yes, we usually get a call or we find out about something through other rescues, other sanctuaries. Like I said, Reba was a pretty unique situation. Morgan, one of our pigs, fell off a transport truck. And he was found in Morgan County, so we were able to grab him. And then a few of the birds people have called us about, a few of the hens. Turkeys came from a pretty big factory farm. Brett, actually, our male turkey, was found out at a gun range, and he had been eating bullet shells. So that was outrageous. I couldn't believe that. So he's doing well. He is like the mascot of the sanctuary. He will sing along with certain songs. He has his own playlist, just so you all know. So if you go to Spotify, he loves many, many different fun artists. So yeah, those are a few of the different stories that they've come from.
Okay. Again, if people are interested, it's Saturday, August 30th out at the ranch there in Browns Canyon.
Yes, yes.
And 5:30 to 9.
Yes, thank you.
All right,
yeah, please
else?
Come. That's it. I hope you make it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Lauren Lockie, again, the executive director of Sage Mountain Sanctuary. Well, nearly 4 years after the plans for the Heber Valley Temple were announced, construction underway. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints first announced its plans to build a temple in Wasatch County in October 2021. It broke ground a year later at the 18-acre site along Center Street, just outside the Heber city limits. The Wasatch County Council unanimously approved the temple plans in November 2023. Soon after, a small group of Red Ledges residents sued the county, saying the development agreement violated the law. Now, about a month after a 4th District Court judge ruled in favor of the plans, saying the county properly approved the development agreement, the church is starting construction. Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh confirmed Monday work is beginning. He said preparing the site will take some time.
I think it will take some months for them to even get up out of the ground.
A church spokesperson told KPCW construction workers are grading the site and installing infrastructure. Work includes extensive dewatering. A 2023 groundwater study estimated the church would need to pump up to 1 million gallons a day for several weeks to keep the site dry enough for construction. Graybaugh said the church told the county construction would take about 3 years. He said the church has had a permit for nearly 2 years and, absent an injunction, could have built already. However, church officials chose to wait until the lawsuit worked its way through court. He said he's not surprised to see work beginning after the judge's ruling.
We want to be a place where people can worship, where people can live their lives and do so in the comfort and within our community. So I think to the extent that this facilitates that, that aligns a lot with who we want to be as a community.
The Red Ledges residents have filed an appeal of the judge's July ruling. When complete, the temple will be 88,000 square feet. It will stand 210 feet tall at its highest point. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
A program that pairs teens with older adults for lively conversation and learning is returning to the Wasatch County Library this fall. Sages and Seekers invites adults 60 and older, who are the sages, and teens ages 13 to 18, the seekers, to participate in an 8-week course that encourages cross-generational relationships. The curriculum uses the sharing of personal stories and experiences to help participants gain new insights and understanding. The program also helps teens improve communication skills and cultivate empathy for the community's elders. Sages and Seekers was first offered in the spring of 2024. It's a collaboration between the library and the Park City-based Live Like Sam Foundation, a nonprofit focused on mental health education and life skills to help youth lead successful lives. Interested participants must apply for the program and attend an orientation meeting. Registration closes September 19th. Classes will meet weekly on Monday nights from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the library in Heber City. Classes begin September 22nd and will continue through November 17th. For more information, you can go online to kpcw.org. Well, the Historic Echo Church is offering another free program this weekend. In the studio with details, I have a member of the Board of Trustees with the Echo Church, Sandra Morrison, and on the phone, who will be giving the lecture, local author and attorney, Brian Craig. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Brian, you're
good morning.
With us. There you are.
Yeah.
Start with you, Sandra, and maybe just tell us a little bit about the Historic Echo Church and why it's such a special setting for this lecture.
So the Echo Church is, a 30-minute drive from Park City. It's located right at the intersection of Interstate 80 and 84. And right in the middle of town is the historic church. It was built 150 years ago next year, 1876. So it's really a special location settled underneath the red cliffs of Echo. It was a huge railroad town for more than 100 years. The Union Pacific operated steam engines that were refueled in Echo. So there was a large coal loading station and water tanks, and everybody that lived in Echo, you know, either worked for the Union Pacific or knew somebody that did. And of course, you know, after the Second World War, with the replacement of steam engines with diesel, the town declined. And it's a very small town of, about 50 people these days. But, the church is so special that we love to open it up in the summer. And it's open every Saturday from 11 until 4 p.m. Up until Labor Day weekend. And so this Saturday will be the last day it's open. And of course, then at 4 o'clock, we're offering this free program for everybody. So I'd suggest come early. We're currently showing an exhibition about immigration, a national story, but I've also included some additional exhibit information about locals and where they immigrated from, and used a number of with actually glass plate negatives that have been reproduced that were taken by George Beard, who is a local photographer, and then also A.J. Russell, who was the photographer for the Union Pacific Railroad. So those photos are from the 1860s. Really unique images.
So, Brian, you're going to be the lecturer. The title is Gunsmoke and Justice, the Untold Saga of Outlaw Patrick Coughlin and Constable Thomas Stagg. How did the idea for hosting that theme come up?
Well, I'm actually working on a book right now. It's a biography of Patrick Coughlin that's going to be released later this year, published by the History Press and Arcadia Publishing. And Constable Thomas Stagg, who was from Echo, he was one of the victims of Patrick Coughlin. He was a law enforcement officer that was shot and killed in trying to apprehend Patrick Coughlin, who was one of the early outlaws and actually was the first person executed in the state of Utah after statehood.
Okay. So this Patrick Coughlin, what makes his story so compelling?
Well, he's really an unknown outlaw. And, a lot of people have heard of the story of Butch Cassidy and, lots of other outlaws, Billy the Kid, from stories of the Old West. And Patrick Coughlin, he was from Park City, and he basically was a young man and stole some strawberries from a street vendor in Park City and then stole some horses. And one thing led to another. And then he was holed up in a cabin kind of near the Idaho or the Utah-Wyoming border. And Constable Stagg was one of the law enforcement officers in a posse that tried to apprehend him and was shot and killed along with another police officer. And then there was this two-week manhunt across the Utah territory trying to apprehend Patrick Coughlin. He was eventually caught and tried, and his case was appealed, and ultimately he was executed, becoming the first person executed by the firing squad in the state of Utah. So I thought it was a really compelling story. I love history, and as a lawyer, I always found this story really interesting, and learning all about the legal aspects of his case and trial and appeal relating to that.
Yeah. So how did you first come across the story? And I guess what drew you to research it?
Yeah, well, I live in Logan. I'm an attorney in Logan, and actually the shooting was not too far from where I live. It's kind of near Bear Lake. And, you know, I came across this story. I was actually working on another book that I'm working on of historic courthouses of Utah and, you know, kind of telling stories of some of the different courthouses. And anyway, I came across the story of Patrick Coughlin. I found just his life really fascinating, and there hadn't been much written about him, and I've decided to work on writing a book. So.
Yeah. So what kind of sources or archives do you have to kind of uncover the details of this?
That's a great question. And I really have digged into, and I, as a lawyer and historian, I like using primary sources as much as possible. So I look through court records. There's the Utah Supreme Court case. We have other court documents, a lot of historic newspapers from the 1890s, which are really helpful, and those have been scanned and digitized, including by some inmates at the Utah State Prison, ironically. And I also relied on government archives, including affidavits that were written by jurors in support of his clemency to the Board of Pardons. In fact, we have handwritten affidavits, sworn statements by some of the jurors asking to the governor at the time, Heber Wells, to commute his sentence. And, you know, I found those sources particularly helpful and persuasive.
So what was frontier justice and law enforcement like back in the day?
Utah, you know, back in the day, this was during kind of the last days of the Old West. And, you know, when it was right before Utah became a state in 1896. And, you know, back then, law and justice was much different than today. We had posses and, you know, tried to chase down outlaws and on horseback. And there were newspapers, and that's how communication. And he was always kind of one step ahead, you know, for several weeks, Patrick Coughlin. And he had another companion that was with him by the name of Fred George. And, you know, they kind of were on horseback, and it was about a manhunt that was front page newspaper at the time. And, you know, eventually was caught, and then he was tried. And back then, you know, trials were very fast. I mean, nowadays on a murder case, you're probably looking, you know, a year or two before you go to trial. I mean, his trial happened within a few months, and then his appeal was about a year. Right now we have, you know, death penalty cases get appealed for 30 plus years, right, where we have inmates on death row in the state of Utah. So back then, you know, even they would have execution on the courthouse lawn, right? That's how it was done, right? His execution was done on a field in the county where the crime took place, and, you know, there was a firing squad in an open field. And so that's how, you know, things were done back then, different than it is today. But I think there's still a lot that we can learn, you know, as we look back on these stories.
Yeah. So the lecture title includes Untold Saga. Are there aspects of the story that maybe have been overlooked, or just the story hasn't been told much?
Well, I think both. I think one, you know, the story hasn't been told, you know, kind of on the back of the book, the tagline is, before Butch Cassidy, there was Patrick Coughlin, right? And, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of people have heard of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and, you know, and other outlaws of Utah. But the story of Patrick Coughlin has been largely forgotten. And a lot of people, and even though it was front page news back in 1896 when he was executed. And some of the things that I've researched in my research, particularly that I found helpful, like I said, we're looking at those juror affidavits, and he never would have been convicted today based on those juror affidavits. The jurors, they said that they didn't support the death penalty. And, you know, if they would have known that he was going to face the death penalty, they never would have convicted him. And now the Supreme Court has basically, the U.S. Supreme Court has held that the jurors must hand down the death penalty sentence on the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. And, you know, I think that's really, you know, interesting that we've been able to look at those affidavits from the jurors, and those were handwritten from the jurors, and I think that's very compelling evidence.
Okay. Sandra, you mentioned that this is it for the summer. You close down, and then what happens over the winter months?
You know, we do a number of repair projects and things like that. We're looking towards celebrating the 150th anniversary next year as well, so if anybody wants to help, let me know.
Anything planned?
No,
at
I don't
this
have anything
point?
Planned at this point. Yes, I'm looking at a traveling exhibition, and then probably some additional exhibition about Echo's history and specifically the church and the 150 years of its service to the community, which is, I mean, it runs the gamut, right? It started off life as a church, also served as a schoolhouse for many years, and now it's center of the community.
Okay. So it's basically open, Memorial Day to Labor Day?
Yeah,
huh?
Memorial Day to
on
Labor
Saturdays.
Day. Yeah, we get a lot of people. It's a beautiful drive out to Echo in the summer, and we get a lot of people coming to visit. And then I like to do some programs. We're looking at some things that might happen in the fall.
Okay. Again, the Historic Echo Church, another free lecture. This will be given by author and attorney Brian Craig, titled Gunsmoke and Justice, The Untold Saga of Outlaw Hector Coughlin and Constable Thomas Stagg. It happens at 4:00 there at the Historic Echo Church. Hey, guys, thanks for both of you. Sandra, Brian, appreciate your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much.
The Summit County Council did not repeal the ordinance that approved Dakota Pacific's controversial development last week. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that a pending court case looms over that decision.
August 14th, Dakota Pacific Real Estate withdrew its application, asking the Summit County Council to approve a 725-unit neighborhood and public-private partnership at Kimball Junction. The Salt Lake City developer is poised to build it anyway, since a new state law required the county to approve it through a separate process. That approval happened in July, so the firm no longer needs the permission it got from the council last December. The county ordinance approving the Kimball Junction project was then challenged by thousands of residents who signed a referendum petition. When the county clerk invalidated about half the signatures, keeping the December ordinance off this November's ballot, the residents took her to court. August 20th, the council discussed repealing the ordinance the referendum originally sought to repeal.
It's kind of an orphaned ordinance.
But Councilmember Roger Armstrong shares his colleagues' concerns about optics and whether repealing the ordinance would influence the court case over the referendum petition signatures. Summit County Deputy Civil Attorney Dave Thomas says repealing the ordinance might help the clerk's case, since the thing the referendum is about wouldn't exist anymore. Council Vice Chair Candace Hart summed up the debate.
To try to let this have its day in court just to get some sort of ruling or clarification. And then there's sort of the pragmatic side of, stopping spending money and repealing the ordinance because the application's already been withdrawn.
The council ultimately voted 4-1 not to repeal the original Dakota Pacific ordinance. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.